Susanna, I apologize because they're doing construction right on my head. Like they are digging a hole to China. So that's why I'm wearing these headphones like I'm in 1999. So I
No
apologize.
worries.
Okay. Okay. Bringing a first viral piece of its kind to life. We have award-winning filmmaker Susanna Fogel with us today. Susanna has directed Flight Attendant, which is the very popular series starring Kaley Cuoco. She's also the was a writer of Booksmart, which we've talked about here. We've had stars of Booksmart. So now she is bringing the 2017 viral short story piece of fiction that was the first of its kind, being a fiction short story published in The New Yorker that went viral, Cat Person, to life. So Susanna, welcome to the show. This is going to be there's this is so interesting on so many levels. First off, and for those of you who don't know, Cat Person is about a young woman who has a very strange yet very common relationship and dynamic with an older man. So off the bat, Susanna, something about this that fascinates me, I read the source material, obviously, watched your movie, is what makes something go viral? Right. And given that this was the first short story of fiction to go viral, it's so fascinating to me because it's not like there's anything super splashy or crazy about this yet. I totally understand why, which we're going to peel back. But what to you off the bat, why were you like, I get it. I get why this went viral in 2017.
I honestly think it was the context in which we heard about the story and then people started arguing about the story. Like, I think it's not, the New Yorker does not usually publish stories that are microscopically well-observed young women dating stories. That's just not something they normally do. So I think the fact that it was there, it sort of elevated it to this place where people were suddenly paying attention to it, where usually a young woman's story would be relegated to like a magazine or a Medium essay or someone's social media. It's just not usually in like the New Yorker. So I think, first of all, people are like, this isn't the New Yorker. I'm confused. Even though the story is amazing, they don't, that's not usually whose stories they center in those fiction pieces that are featured. So I think, first of all, there was a bit of, okay, this is literature. What is this about? And then I think just the fact that people started reading it and absorbing it that were not just young women, and then people started arguing about it, and then the narrative was like a runaway train where the argument became the narrative. Like, why is the story getting under people's skin so much? Why are men so sensitive to the way that she describes Robert when women get described every which way by men since the dawn of time, and we're just like used to it? It's just like, what? And then the male sensitivity was like pissing women off, and then men were like, it's cruel, and women are like, welcome to our world. And it just became about so much more. I think the story is about a lot, but this became this like cultural moment where people really wanted to argue about things that had really clearly been on their minds. And then it really just generated more and more conversation, and clearly we're not done talking about it. And we clearly need like a platform to talk about sex and dating in conversations that are not just about consent, yes or no, assault, yes or no, love, yes or no. Like, this is a movie about, and a story about a lot of gray areas and a lot of,
Exactly. That's
that's like,
why
what
I
is it
say
about?
it. Yes, and that's why I say it was so fascinating because again, it wasn't some big splashy in your face thing, yet the subtleties of all the nuances, which we're going to get into, is what really I think resonated in a really kind of like what you got at, which is like got under people's skin in a really kind of gripping, like I said, subtle way, but that speaks magnitudes because a lot of these themes are really, I think, hard to capture, which you did obviously in this film. Before kind of getting into the specifics, like you mentioned, consent and all this. And off the bat, I'll say something, we're kind of alluding to all these themes. Like I'll just say for the viewers, off the bat, for me, something that it captures is like women, the universal theme of women enduring bad sex. Like, what is the deal? But What for you, Susanna? Because there are so many, you're right. At the time, it was just, it went down so many avenues. I don't want to say picked apart, but so many debates branched off of this story. Even like what you said, like, why is this even a debate? And at the end, I'm reading some of the reasons why I thought were a little bit of a stretch of why people thought it was so controversial. Like the fact that the main character is, you know, it's through the lens of like a young white girl and white girl privilege, or the fact like how you just, how you say how she describes Robert, because we're in her head and she describes him as, you know, having a belly and being chubby, which I thought made her honest. And people were like, it's fat shaming, right? So some elements like that I thought were a stretch. However, things like what you were getting at, gender dynamics, power, consent, I could see why those would take off in terms of debate. So what for you, Susanna, made this, what was the most provocative or controversial aspect for you?
I mean, I think, well, what was controversial about how the story resonated for me was that people would like be arguing with this woman's experience at all. Like, this is her experience. I don't know a single woman who read that story and didn't connect to some part of the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether they thought Margot was culpable for certain things or felt bad for Robert or whatever. Like, if you hear about a breakup from two different sides, like a friend's, if you know two people that broke up and you talk to them, you get a completely different take on the relationship. I mean, there are as many opinions about dating and sex encounters as there are people. Like, people just project their own shit onto it. So to me, what was most fascinating was that people were so inflamed about it, really. But I think what's most interesting about the story and ultimately the movie, or one thing that's interesting, is really that Margot does consent. It's just actually looking at that. Like, I think people are eager to boil it down into one thing where it's a movie about consent. It's only about consent in the sense that she does consent. Like, she consents a lot of times. Women consent to a lot of shit they don't want to do. That's kind of like part of what it's about. or they think they want to do it and then they don't. And I think the more we place emphasis on consent, and the more movies and books and the culture say, did he or didn't he get the yes, the one word yes from the woman? Like, if it's about that, are you denying that there's like complexity to these encounters? Are you saying that every 20-year-old woman knows what she wants? Because I didn't when I was 20, and I don't actually know anyone who knows what they want. And that's like a fixed thing that doesn't change. But also, that's complicated for men, because men aren't supposed to intuit that she might change her mind. And, you know, it's those nuances that actually feel much more, those nuances need to be talked about. In my opinion, more than the nuance of whether someone is bad for overriding someone's verbal no, because yes, that is a bad thing to do. I don't need to keep talking about that, but I do want to keep talking about what happens if two people are in this situation like this. Like, that is much more common. So
you, Susanna, hit the nail on the head. And I talk, you know, I was on red carpets when Me Too first came on the scene, and I'd written op-eds about this. And my audience knows I'm very vocal about, you know, empowering women to, in the moment, like, if you don't like something, be vocal, you know, you exactly what you said. And, you know, you also can't expect the other person to read your mind, right? But there also are so many nuances, and you're exactly right. It's like our culture wants everything to be so black and white. And what I think so, what's struck about this and what you're getting at is, you know, it's almost, and she describes this in her internal dialogue, it's like a guilt. It's like, I initiated it and I, you know, and now I feel guilty for kind of being like, I'm not digging it anymore. And there's a great line in the story where it's like, it's the metaphor of ordering a fancy meal and then sending it back, right? And so that's the nuance that this really captures, is it's not the extreme of what you're saying. Like, right, I said no and that person, you know, crossed the line. It's more like, you know, yes, she consented, she's going through it, and then she kind of wants it to be over, right? Like, so she's faking it at this point, being like, I'm just gonna, like, how many women can relate to this? It is so, so true. And so I wanted to pick your brain on, you know, given that you do capture the human experience in your work, I'm not expecting you to be like a you know, sociology professor expert, but, you know, do you think that this is a function of, I personally think it's a function of being socialized and biology when it comes to, like, kind of what you said, it's like women maybe not being as assertive or being polite. And let's be honest, not as like sex obsessed as men. Men are visual, more assertive. Like, what do you think plays into this? Such a common theme of women, yes, consenting, but being like, can we get it over with? Like, I'm not enjoying this experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is both of the things you say. And just to add to the biology thing or the psychology of it, I think there is like a visceral fear that not only are we conditioned to placate men and to take care of their sensitivities, because if one story comes out where she talks about a belly, men lose their minds over it. But meanwhile, we have like every writer from John Updike to whoever talking about like the nuances of his wife's muffin top, but sure. Okay, fine.
See women though, be like, this is fat shaming. Like at the time when it, you know, and it's like,
yeah, you know, but it's her perception. She's not telling, she's not tweeting about his belly. She's experiencing the belly, and Kristen exactly. is talking about Kristen is
exactly
is it, Kristen through Margot is making an observation that this person in a sexual situation with a naked man she doesn't know is feeling about his body that she's not attracted to. And if she's attracted to it in the moment, she wouldn't notice the belly. That's the truth, you know. She's picking it apart because she's like dissociating from the experience and she's not connected to her own body. But that's a whole thing. But I think it's also you know, it's the biology of the sex obsession, but I also think it's that women were conditioned to placate men, but also we are, I think on some level, just we're aware that they're bigger and stronger than us biologically. Like, I think that goes into the placating. Like, I think there is a, oh my God, what happens if I piss this guy off? Like, there is a component to that I think is like a subconscious, he could really hurt me, is connected to him being bigger, you know. It just is
interesting. I also think it's a function too of women, like, it's again, I love that metaphor. It's like, I ordered the fancy meal and I'm scared to send it back. It's like this guilt and like, again, having to be polite. Like, you ever notice, it's even like, I notice I do it, right? It's like when you bump into someone, it's like, oh, sorry, it's like this apologetic kind of thing. And it seeps into, you know, sex and all kinds of interactions every day with us, you know?
Yeah, it does. I think there's like a fear of we're also conditioned to really want people to like us and to think, to care a lot about what people think of us in a way where we're trying to like style ourselves to be likable all the time. And I think part of that is not seeming like we're taking up too much space, or like we're not self-aware, or we're too intrusive or aggressive. So the bumping into people example is a good example of that, where it's like, we don't want to be perceived as someone who just shoves them out of the way. We want to be perceived as someone who's like, no, you go first. You know, there is like, it's such a woman thing to do, you know, even for smart women who are like feminists, it's still
100%. And I really appreciate, it's really interesting. Like I said, it's so rare that we capture this in media and entertainment, yet it's such a common thing. And I thought the way that you portrayed it on screen and bringing her inner dialogue to life, I won't give away exactly, you know, how that happens, but I thought that was really smart, because it's tough. It's like, how do you actually get in there and see the inner working of what often goes on in women's minds, right? So I thought the way that you did that was really interesting.
Yeah, that was Michelle who wrote the script. That was really her idea. And we talked a lot about, like, you know, psychology and Jung and the subconscious and like the splitting off that happens when you don't want to be in your own body. You don't want to be like present for something, that you sort of float above yourself, watching yourself, or just the moment when you're, you know, you have these moments where you're like, oh my God, how did I enter this scene in a movie? Like, you have a fight with someone and you're like, how did I get myself into a situation where I'm having this fight? There's a self-awareness that happens when your brain is sort of working over time, that it's almost like splitting off from yourself in that way.
So let's pivot to the character of Robert before we wrap, because again, like the subtleties of this story, but that speak volumes, right? And are so common. What's so interesting to me is his character is really kind of elusive. You don't know like what he's thinking. Is he good, bad? Meanwhile, Margot's inner dialogue, I mean, how relatable is this, right? It's like, back and forth constantly. Again, the shift in power. It's like, she has the power. No, she doesn't. Does he like me? No, he doesn't. I don't care. Yes, I do. Meanwhile, like, he's this kind of mystery the whole time. Mm-hmm. What does that say, you know, in and of itself, you know, to you being the filmmaker, like, what does that say about such a common gender dynamic in society right now?
I mean, I think that if the story was told from Robert's perspective, he would have his own version of projecting and flip-flopping and analyzing, most likely. But
right.
But to the extent that this is Margot's story and women are prone to that, I think, yeah, I mean, it's partly that we, especially now, it's like we have a lot of data, or what we think is data, from literal data, from our phones, from whatever. We have so much more like information that isn't actually in person. It's like, there's so much more storytelling we can do from a million text messages. That is, it like tells a powerful story. And that story has like twists and turns that come entirely from your phone and not from being with a person and being like, do I feel comfortable? Does the conversation flow when I'm sitting 2 feet away from this person in a bar? Like, that is, that can be totally different from like how quickly you're texting somebody.
Yeah, and so true.
And then I think that disconnect is a real mind fuck for people. But actually, so you don't know them until you know them. Like, all of that is like, it's a presentation of them. You're absorbing it on your own time and your own space without the person there. If you're in a good mood, you're going to read it one way. If you have a narrative about how they're a villain, you're going to read their same text message another way. Like, that information has little to do with the person. But the thing that does have to do with the person is when you're sitting there with them. But in today's world, it's like, we don't actually have a lot of literal FaceTime with the person. We can have a lot of what we think is information before we do that. And like, if that ratio could become a little more balanced, so we're like with people actually drawing conclusions from the actual encounters, it would be helpful. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, I think you feel like ordering the fancy meal is that part of ordering the fancy meal is like all the text messages you send, but those are text messages you're sending in your pajamas at your house to someone that you're not sitting with. And I don't know if that feels like you're leading someone on, and it feels to the other person like you're leading them on. I mean, you don't actually know what you're asking for because you don't know them, you know? So that's also complicated, you know?
Yeah. We have time for two more questions, which is perfect. It's what I have. We are right on time. You know, I like that you flip the script, no pun intended. And you're like, you know, from Robert's point of view, it might be this. I won't give away how your movie ends, but in the end of the short story, let's just say this, like, we see his, I don't want to say true colors, but again, a subtlety yet something that's so pervasive right now about young men, which is and like an insecurity and an immaturity. And he, you know, hurls an insult at her. Let's just say this. And I too, like, I experienced this, and I'm so not a person who throws men under the bus. Like, I got men's back. I think like we all like empower one another. Let's do this. But I'll admit, like, I've even gotten, you know, similar, you know, comments like, oh, you're not even hot. It's like, what are you, 12? You know, from people online. It's like that kind of thing. So again, just your thoughts and unpacking that and what that says about, you know, unfortunately what that says about the nature of some dudes right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting to me about that moment and why it led to expanding the movie beyond that moment in the story is really that, in a way, the snapshots you get of Robert in the story are like, it's sort of, if you think about the worst thing you've ever said to somebody when you felt insecure, hurt, whatever, it's probably really bad. And if your whole character was defined by that one moment, you probably would feel like you were not being given like a fair treatment, you know? So which is not to defend any aspect of the text. It's more to say, there's more to that. There's more to Robert's justification of why he did that. And you can not care what his justification is or say, it doesn't matter, there's no excuse, you're toxic, whatever, which is a totally valid perspective. But I think there's context that leads men to do that stuff, and that context and their side of the story, it's not a defense of their side of the story per se, as much as it is saying they have their own narrative about why they feel the way they feel and what kind of led them to that like toxic stew of things that led them to behave that way. And I think that's, that context is also important because it's part of it, you know?
Definitely. I unpack that on my show. It's like, it's almost like the bully. Like obviously they have something going on to where they would, you know, react or antagonize it in a certain way. So I love that you unpack that nuance. Lastly for you. So this line really struck me. This is from a Vox article at the time of when Cat Person first went viral. And, you know, being, you know, you're somebody who, you know, again, award-winning, nominated, has worked with, you know, Olivia Wilde, Booksmart, you know, Kaley Cuoco, right? All these forces in entertainment. And I want to just see what you make of this. So it says, our culture tends to consider things that happen to men to be compelling, universal, and worthy of attention, whereas with women, to be trivial, uninteresting, and petty. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. I think that's why I was thrilled to see the story in The New Yorker. And that's actually where I think I've heard people dismiss the story and say, this isn't the kind of thing New Yorker should be publishing. And I'm like, why? Why? Because it's a young woman's experience with dating. And you think that that's like the stuff of women's magazines and shouldn't be in this fancy magazine. There is a lot of sexism around that. You know, why does a story about a woman, why is it so progressive to see a man reading a book by a woman about a woman? Why does that still make you think, oh, wow, what a good guy, what a feminist guy. He like reads, you know, this female novelist and listens to Bjork. Like what a progressive man. No, he's just a person.
Not the Bjork throw.
You know what I'm saying? It's like those are not like out of the box woke men just because they're absorbing like content made by women, but they're perceived that way. Even though we always absorb content about men, we see Mission Impossible. We're not like considered to be, you know, anything one way or another because we take in culture that is produced by men because most of it is, you know, I don't know. So I think I couldn't agree with that more. And that is like an unexamined area of sexism. I mean, it's examined in that article, but like, we don't talk about that enough. And I think it's also tied to the economy. It's like, if the box office is, if sort of the most extreme version of men have a bias about that and they don't want to see like a chick thing or read a chick thing, then the economy is driven by men because women will see both or read both or buy both. And then it just perpetuates the problem where like the universal experience is like the white man's experience and everything else is fringe, which it shouldn't be.
I will say, and I have to wrap, you know, a jumping off point for viewers and listeners, something that this really made me think about is even beyond what you're talking about, right? And again, and I'm so not a like, women are inherently victims person, but it really made me think in culture, eons going back, like stories and what's present, Greek gods, gladiators, you know, in wars and heroes, seeing all of these stories. And it made me really think about that and the big, big picture, you know, and that could be a whole other conversation for another day, but you know, what that is. And so with that being said, if you could just do like a Cleopatra movie next, we would love that. And yeah, just make it happen for us. Susan, no pressure.
No, not at all. I'll just dash one off after this.
Yeah. Yeah. No big deal. I mean, yeah, just, you know, reverse the last, like I said, you know, couple hundred centuries is fine. So, no. but I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And, this is really interesting and, yeah, excited to see what happens with the movie. Thanks, Susanna.
Thank you. This was really fun. Thanks for the conversation. It's awesome.
Absolutely. Likewise. Thanks.